There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile continuing on. And a big thank you to Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. It's always good to get him in studio and let y'all ask questions. Another feature just like that happening right now with epidemiologist and guest on this show every week and a man who's very busy in the vaccine rollout in Mobile County. Dr. Scott Chavers joins us now. And we hadn't talked in a week and a half, a week, and a lot's happened. So, Dr. Chavers, good to hear from you.
Yeah, hey, Sean, good to be here.
I guess I have a big list of questions for you, but I'm going to start off with what is making headlines right now and something you and I have talked about several times on the rollout of the J&J vaccine, Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine. You talked about that in a previous life you had worked with that company. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. Okay. I was with them for almost 15 years and actually – safety and epidemiology of vaccines globally fell under my group.
Wow. So, I mean, this is your wheelhouse.
It does fit within that, yes. And so some of the things that are being discussed today, you know, I've been involved with in a prior life. So hopefully we can communicate maybe what the process is and how what has triggered this and probably what we're going to see in terms of next steps.
Okay, let's do this. Let's set the stage for those that have not followed this and then dig into it. So Johnson & Johnson, the COVID-19 vaccine, the one shot, right? It was a one shot vaccine, right?
That is correct.
Okay, so it's
correct.
A lot of people know it as the one shot, even though there are other, but it's that one. That there's been news stories of blood clots. They said rare and severe blood clots associated with this. Now, break this down for us. Tell us what's going on here. What's real? You know, what are we looking at?
Okay. So there have been 6 reports in the U.S. of a type of blood clot linked with some platelet issues that are not seen very often. I mean, they are rare. And these are different than the clots you probably hear about in your legs, you know, that type of thing, because they do occur in the head. And what's interesting here, and the way we would work through this, is we would look at kind of the who, what, when, where, and then we would get into the why.
Okay.
So what's unusual about this, and let me just, I need to be very clear about differentiating Moderna and Pfizer vaccines from the AstraZeneca and the J&J vaccines, because they're two very different mechanisms. And these blood clotting events are not being seen in the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccines at all. They have been seen in the EU with AstraZeneca. Now, AstraZeneca is not approved in the U.S. And then now we've got the 6 reports here in the U.S. linked to the J&J vaccine. And so, like I said, they were 6. So to give you an idea of numbers, 1 death and 1 hospitalization, and then the other 4 were identified out of about 6.85 million doses of J&J given. So when we talk about very rare, it is 0.0000015 is the fractions.
So, and on top of that, it seems to be this number, and specific to women, right? You said women ages 18 to 48?
Yeah. So what this gives is where there? We get into some, this is what I think caused FDA pause, because what they were seeing is this was occurring, you know, in all six were women. All six were between the ages of 18 and 48. And so when we talk about the WHO part of that, that's a very defined cluster mm-hmm. when you're talking about rare events. So there's something going on there. And so what will happen in the advisory committee meeting is they will start taking a look. And Pfizer has, J&J has already done this. They will have gone in and looked at what contributing factors or other factors that may be either causing this without the vaccine or interacting with the vaccine that's resulting in these clotting events.
So with this pause, what is this? Let's just talk about, we'll come back to the science part of this, but let's just talk about the rollout and the logistics of this. Now, what does this mean for the vaccine rollout? Is this going to be a big hit for some states more than others? How about our area? How much J&J was at play here? What do you know?
So I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago that, you know, there's going to be the initial dosage allocated to Alabama, about 144,000. And then there was going to be a couple of more smaller ones, but then J&J had a manufacturing issue. And so that was going to delay their distribution quite a bit. So the benefits of the J&J vaccine was, you know, single dose, good efficacy, still a very good safety profile, because we're talking about an ultra rare event here. But the real benefit there was in those populations that had a higher probability of not returning for the second vaccine. And so these are your homelessness, incarcerated individuals with mental disabilities, that type of thing, which is really where the J&J vaccine would have been and still potentially may be a very good weapon in the armamentarium.
So this is also kind of goes back to what we had talked about before with this is blood clots, but and it seems like it's clustered here. There may be a flag, but on other, is there a way to show, like, okay, if you have 1,000 people go in and get a vaccine, let's say it's a Pfizer or Moderna, to stay out of this J&J, and X number have, you know, people say, well, this person had a stroke, this person had heart issue, these things. But the question, I think, is a fair one. I don't know the answer to, maybe you do, but in that same 1,000 of people, if they didn't get a vaccine, how many would have had a stroke or a heart issue out of that cohort, right? I mean,
exactly.
How do you answer that? Is there any way to try to figure these things out?
There is. And so what you're talking about is kind of the natural history of what goes on. So, for instance, if you look at the ages of 18 to 48, you know, we have women of reproductive age. We have individuals that may be on certain types of hormones, which carry a risk. Certain other drugs like antibiotics carry risk for these outcomes. So it knowing what that level of expectedness is within this 18 to 48-year-old age group will be informative to understand how much of a contribution, if any, the J&J vaccine is playing into the blood clot phenomenon.
You'd almost have to have, okay, here's a sample of women in that age group that didn't get the vaccine. All right, here's how many had blood clots. Now, here are the people in that age group that did have vaccine. I know there are probably a lot of other things put in there, but compare one against the other, right? I mean, is that over?
Exactly.
Okay.
You do that. And what's really interesting here, though, is when we kind of talked about the who, you know, the what part of this is a very specific type of blood clotting event that also involves a platelet issue. And so that's really, you want to be very specific on what you're looking at. The other things that come into play, again, are what kind of, what we would call polypharmacy. So what else is going on? And these blood clots tend to be mediated by an immune response. So we've talked about antibodies in the past, as opposed to kind of metabolic clotting that you may see. So there's a lot that goes into trying to provide context around these six events and to find out if this is truly unexpected or not.
Let's talk about the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine, the two dose that people are most familiar mm-hmm. with. People are asking questions about, I hear people say something, a stroke, right? That there's these incidences of stroke with that. What is the research showing now?
Well, there doesn't, again, the research on both Pfizer and Moderna is getting more and more robust because the number of vaccines delivered out of those two manufacturers are far beyond what J&J has done. And so the populations that have been covered and the what we would call heterogeneity or the differences in the populations are much wider than the J&J vaccine. So we're starting to understand more and more, and it appears that the safety profiles on both of those vaccines are extremely good. So not seeing the clotting issues. You know, and we talked about this before, you know, early on there were reports of death. And somebody said, well, there's 7 deaths in Norway. And then you realize, well, there's 400 deaths in that same population per week in the exact setting. So that's where you have to get into how much context is available. And putting that number into perspective is so critically important. And then looking at what the risk and benefits are once you do that assessment. And again, if you're talking about events, let's take the death, one death out of, you know, all the vaccines that have been administered, you know, from the J&J vaccine, you know, you're talking about infinitesimal numbers where risk are down below where it's, you know, you hear about people having refrigerators fall on them and the risk of that happening. And people have a hard time, I think, evaluating what their true risk is when they just hear, hey, there are 6 events, one of which was a death.
All right, coming right back. More with Dr. Scott Chavers, Mobile County Health Department. Got a couple of questions here on this J&J vaccine. Some more coming in at 343-0106. Plus, we'll talk about the latest numbers here on vaccine rollout in the state of Alabama and where you can get yours. Ball straight ahead.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Out. 123 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Continue our conversation with Dr. Scott Chavers, Mobile County Health Department. We'll get to the times for vaccines and the who, what, when, where, and why of that in just a second. I do want to, Dr. Chavers, a texter asked, said, question for Dr. Chavers, why wouldn't this blood clotting issue have been found during clinical trials?
Yeah, hey, that's a great question. So if you look at the event rate, which we're talking about, let's say, 6 out of 6.85 million, that breaks down to a population size that just are not included in the clinical trials. So this is an ultra rare disease, and you won't see them in any clinical trial that you do. This is where you start picking up some of these, signals. Now it's a little more stronger, so it becomes an association, and this is where we go into the assessment. But it's just clinical trials aren't that big. They aren't practical to do that either by cost or based on ethics, because when you're showing that a drug or vaccine or is, very, very efficacious and has a very, very good safety profile, to then withhold that for unmet medical needs to try to do 500 million types of trials just is just not feasible and not ethical.
I want to ask another question here. With that, even though that's J&J and having to pull J&J out, it's going to have a ripple effect on people getting the vaccine, right? Vaccine hesitant people. And this is what's more interesting. And I've said, you could probably define me in that group. Not people that are, heck no, never get a vaccine. Yeah, people that are pro-vaccine. And this is not for people that are, there's some people that say yes to everything, whatever. I think there's a lot of people in the middle, and they're trying to make the right decision for themselves, for the health of their families. And a story like this comes out and does give them pause, right? I mean, until you get it in contact, you hear it and you go, well, wait a second. I want to make sure I'm making the right decision here.
Exactly. And this is, again, looking at what the risk of the event is. So ultra low. I mean, when I do it in my calculator, it goes to the exponentials. Yeah. So extremely low. But understand, and this is an area I think that we in public health have not done a sufficient job, is educating the population on truly what the safety of these vaccines are and the risk of not getting them. And so this is my big concern, is people will take what they're seeing, big news headlines always spun where, this is causal, without waiting for the assessment to be done. And it may end up that this is a causal association. And so you get one death out of, the 6.85 million, and then to transfer that over to the other two vaccines, which have shown no issues around there, it's still, from a risk benefit decision, it's not the right bet to use so this is where we need to do better at educating people and getting more information out there, so that risk assessment at the individual level can be done more appropriately.
Let's talk about the other side of the motivation. There's that side, and then there is the unknown of, well, I guess it's known, and we just have about 2 minutes here. Where are we with the UK strain or the South African strain or Brazilian strain? Kind of give us your two-minute drill on this.
Yeah, so last estimate I saw from CDC, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, is that the variant from the UK would be the predominant strain in the U.S. by the end of March. And I think we missed that by 4 days, Sean. So you and I were wrong by 4 days.
4 days.
But it is becoming predominant. The predominant, it's in all 50 states. And the concern there is, with the loosening of the mask mandates and kind of rolling back the other mitigation activities, once that variant, the B.1.1.7 variant, is more likely to be transmitted. So that's a concern. We are starting to see the variants out of South Africa, which are even more problematic. And then the one out of Brazil is of the three that we've talked about, probably the most concerning, and that is starting to pop up. There's another one that is coming out of California, and that one hasn't really taken hold yet, but we're also monitoring that as well. So it hasn't gone away, and there are certain circumstances that you should definitely still be wearing your mask. even though all the mask mandates, I think, in the most part, at least down here, have been lifted.
Let's before we wrap here, we have just 30 seconds, but if somebody wants to get a vaccine, what's the best way to get your information? Is it the website or where they do that?
Yeah, so our website, nchdcares.com, it'll show you all of our clinics. We are out at Calvert, this big steel plant up in Calvert, doing vaccines until 8 o'clock. And then you can look at our website. You'll see where we're doing clinics. And then if you go to the ADPH website, it will show you all the clinics that are available. So including the federal programs that are now being done by Walmart and CVS and others.
Dr. Chavers, we appreciate the update, and we'll talk again next week.
Sounds good. Thank you, Sean.
You're welcome. News is next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5's Midday Mobile. That's this show. Hey, y'all. I'm Sean. Remember the website, fmtalk1065.com. Streaming there, podcast available a la carte, although probably more efficient to do iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Deezer, any of those platforms. You can get our subscription for our podcast for free. Listen to us right there. And while you're on the website, too, check out the show schedules, online opinion poll question, three big things, top news stories of the day, all right there for you at fmtalk1065.com. And then, of course, the fantastic Facebook, the fantastic Instagram page, and the mediocre Twitter feed that I'm responsible for. Check them all out. All right. It's a conversation that we had a couple weeks ago, maybe a week ago, with Representative Shane Stringer. We're talking about Highway 45 and his call to do what so many of us have talked about for so long, to four-lane it. And we will get to an update on that. But first, I got more news to talk about with Representative District 102 Shane Stringer, who joins us now. Thanks for your time.
Yes, sir. Thank you all for having us.
It was, I guess, reading this email from you yesterday, legislation by Representative Shane Stringer offering Alabama an antidote to Biden's unconstitutional attacks on the Second Amendment. I've been, hard on this story, for quite a while now, but you're obviously moving something on a legislative level. Tell us what you see the issue as and how you propose legislation to fix that.
This is a nationwide problem, man. This is going on across the country, and something's got to be done, and we're going to have to do it on a state level. You know, the Democrats control the White House and both houses, so we've got to do something on a state level to try to do it. And my idea of doing that is this bill, this 337, which is a Alabama Second Amendment sanctuary state, which would protect our Constitution, which is what we're supposed to be doing on a federal and state level, which is not happening. So, I'm the bill is in judiciary. We're hoping to get it up in committee and hopefully get this bill out and get a vote on it soon. Something's got to give. We're going to have to stand our ground as states if we're going to defend our Constitution and our Second Amendment rights.
Let's talk about this. The Alabama Firearms Protection Act. How does this propose to do this? How do you make Alabama a Second Amendment sanctuary state? Can I give you the legs of this?
It will prohibit any state entity or state agency or elected official from enforcing any executive orders from the president or any new federal laws that are unconstitutional related to Second Amendment, related to guns, ammunition, gun accessories, whether it be magazines, scopes, bump stops, whatever, the accessories that go with it. It will prohibit any state official or state agency from enforcing those laws, which would help protect us from any. And it will not stop the federal agencies and the federal government from trying to enforce it, but we would not be enforcing it.
Okay, and I want to get to that part with the federal side of this and reporting, because you say sanctuary state. We talk about, on the flip side, sanctuary cities, where these cities have refused to comply with federal immigration law, right? That they don't follow the law, they're not going to arrest, they're not going to hold and transfer. So is it that same kind of vibe, but in this case for the Second Amendment?
It is, and basically those cities that use that doctorate to to become sanctuary cities for illegal immigrants and whoever else, they used the Ninth Amendment and Tenth Amendment as a defense to do that, and the Supreme Court upheld it. So if they can do it on that ground, then there's no reason we can't do it to stand our ground on the Second Amendment.
All right, let's talk about some of these things. And you say unconstitutional, I guess, you know, we're talking about executive actions that will then be challenged in court. But in the meantime, let's walk through this. Your history in law enforcement, so I want to hear it through your law enforcement eyes. Vehicle's pulled over, and in that vehicle, there's a rifle with a let's go to the extreme that everybody, I don't think it's extreme, but people do, a bump stock, right? So there's a piece of polycarbonate that is on that AR platform there, and the officer sees it, and let's say that there's been an executive action, you know, for it, or even better yet, the pistol braces that they're going after. The officer sees that. That could be police department, could be sheriff's department, could be state trooper. Are you saying that they would do nothing about it? Would they report it? How would that work?
They would not do anything on it. We will not enforce any unconstitutional laws. If it is not constitutional, then any law enforcement officer in this state will not be allowed to enforce that, or legal action could be held against them or any entity that tries to enforce any of these unconstitutional executive orders or laws that are being put out.
So would there be a report made but no enforcement, or nothing happens?
There's no reason for a report to be made.
Well, that's what I was asking, because if that got back to the feds, then, you know.
That's right. There's no reason for a report to be made. I mean, they're just going to the extreme, and this did. It hadn't just started. This has been an effort that has gone on for years in an attempt to do away with guns and ammunition and Second Amendment. This has been a fight that's been going on long before Shane Stringer ever become a elected official. So, and it'll probably be going on after I'm gone. So we have got to just do something. You know, normally there's balance in everything we do. There's balance in government. Sometimes it goes too far to the left, sometimes maybe too far to the right. And what you look for is that happy area in the middle. And I if we're not careful, we're not going to have that happy area in the middle.
As we look at where this may go, let's say that this becomes law of the land and how the feds may enforce this. Do you see it as being sued by the federal government and going through that process? Do you see it as being withholding of federal funds? I mean, what might be the dangers of a federal response to this?
And you're exactly right. And that is the concerns of leadership in Montgomery, is that, one, the federal government may choose to withhold grants or funds, federal funds, from our state because of this. They may they may take legal action and sue us or whatever, but, you know, like I explained to them, you know, that does not negate our obligation to do what is right and to stand up. You know, as a police officer, from time to time, I arrest the same people over and over. We go down and maybe the judge lets them out too many times or too early or something, but I can't let that action stop me from doing my job. Gotcha. I still have to enforce the law and do what I'm supposed to. I look at it the same way in Montgomery. You know, that will be up to the governor and to the attorney general to determine how far they want to fight it or do. But it is still, as a legislator, it is our job to do everything we can to protect our citizens.
If you're just joining us, District 102 Representative Shane Stringer, our guest. We'll circle back to a story we talked about last time you're on the show, and that is, and he had a big press conference that day, brought in a lot of folks, a lot of leaders from all around, from municipal level, county level, state level, to talk about the need to four-lane Highway 45. What has been the reaction from Montgomery?
Not a lot, which is not surprising to me. We've had a lot of attention and a lot of support in press. We've got letters coming from every commissioner, every city in our area, you know, in support of this and requesting the need for this. The only reaction that I've had from anybody was contacted by an ALDOT member to try to confront me about the number of deaths that the number of deaths were not exact. And, you know, in the press conference, in the release, I've told them this was an approximate number because I've requested this information from ALDOT. They will not give it to me. So I had to get the information from the local law enforcement and officials, and I knew the numbers were not exact, but they are right on it. And like I explained to them, if 63 deaths in their eyes is better than 50 or 73, then we've got problems. You know,
right? If the reason not to do it is 10, is a difference in 10 deaths.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like I told someone, I'm elected by a district to represent them and to bring the needs of my district to Montgomery. I have been doing that for 2.5 years on deaf ears, you know, and then it really frustrated me. I would have loved a call from ALDOT or the governor's office asking to meet with me and let's talk about this and see even if it's a long-term plan of how we're going to tackle this. But instead, I request to meet with the governor. That's not been set up yet. This is going on our second week, waiting on that. Instead, I get one call from ALDOT to conflict the number of deaths. And that was extremely frustrating.
That's their only reaction. It's not like, hey, maybe we have to move it to next year. We don't have the funding. It's to question the number of deaths by 10.
Yeah, I mean, That's a problem within itself. Why would that be an issue? Why not just call and say, hey, let's sit down and work on this and let's come up with a solution. Let's come up with a plan, you know, some kind of long-term plan. Like I told them, it's like everything in life. When something's important to you, you find a way to make it happen. And this is not important to Montgomery. When this becomes important, whenever one of their loved ones or their family members get killed on this road, it will become a priority and important, and they'll start laying some asphalt. But we're going to keep kicking the can down the road.
So if in that conversation, is 63 deaths, is that okay then?
That's what I asked him. You know, that's exactly what I asked the ALDOT employee. I said, you know, does that make it any better? Do y'all feel better that it could be 63 instead of 73? You know, I just don't understand it. I can't wrap my brain around. You know, I've even considered looking at legislation of trying to make it to where the deadliest highway per mile capital has to be on the top of the priority list. You know, something has got to be done, you know. Because everything that I and Representative Easterbrook have done lately and Jack Williams seems to be falling on deaf ears.
This is y'all hear this. This is a firsthand account of the reaction from ALDOT to this. If I can say I'd lie if I said I was surprised, but I can tell you right now I'm disappointed in a big, big way. That's the reaction. It's not that. That's the reason. That's the only interaction is a question on the number of deaths. That's. Wow. What is, I mean,
and it,
go ahead.
It's kind of ironic, but even as I've talked to other legislators here in Montgomery from other parts of the state, they know about Highway 45 and the deaths there and how dangerous it is. If they know and they support it, we've got the full support of the Baldwin delegation. We've got the full support of the Mobile delegation. We've got Brett Easterbrook and Senator Albritton in the northern district above me there. If all of them can see that there's a problem, there's been at least nine governors petition to do something with this road over the last 30, 40, maybe even 50 years. I mean, what is it going to take to get some action done?
Okay, great question. I hope we get that answered. Before we wrap, I've got a lot of questions for you here, but this one stands out because I know it's a subject that has been talked about on this radio station, HB, I don't know which way, the Confucius Institute's bill.
Yep.
Where's that? What's the status of that bill?
I don't know the exact status of it, but, you know, I agree with it. Something's got to be done. I think that's Tommy Haynes' bill, and want to say it's been brought out of committee and it should be coming to the floor soon, but you know, that's got to be addressed, man. We're having issues. There's no excuse to have that kind of program in our higher education programs. There is no excuse for us to allow China to be having to have a program at the University of Alabama or any other higher education college.
We'll have to revisit that when we have more time. Talk about what those Confucius Institutes are, and what this bill hopes to do about them. Representative Stringer, as always, we appreciate your time, and we'll keep giving you a platform to talk about Highway 45, because it's a sad statement coming back from the state. That's all I can say.
Well, I appreciate your help, and I promise everyone I'll keep fighting on this end.
Thank you very much. We'll talk soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
There he is, Representative Shane Stringer joining us, and we're coming right back for a Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 154 FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile. Dalton and I were talking about this earlier out in the hall. The Fukushima story. Fukushima story, right? They're going to, well, that's what you got, this water and a little contaminated, but we're going to put this back. Got that. At the same time, here's another, and I know I go on about this, but I think I'm asking a fair question. That where is our news cycle? Where's our news cycle when it seems like once a month, I would say there's some story about what the Pentagon has on UFOs, and these stories come out, and it's like it moves to the bottom of a stat. Like nobody wants to talk about that. And where are we when a UFO story comes out? And UFOs just mean unidentified flying object. I don't know. There's little green men and women in them, but this latest update here. What was this? At end of last week, said analyzing images have been leaked. This is from Fox 8. Analyzing images have. Which is out of where, like Schenectady or something. Amazing images have been leaked from a secretive Pentagon investigation of UFOs. Task force has been gathering evidence for a comprehensive report for Congress, which is due in June, that includes photographs and videos of UFO encounters with U.S. military assets, including Navy destroyers off the Southern California coast. By the way, Dalton, book me for watching that. Like, the Senate committee meetings are often snoozers. But if they're going to be talking about UFOs, I'm going to see how they deal with that. It says part of the report is to educate other military and intelligence officers about the nature of the UFO mystery. New images were gathered by the task force and obtained by investigative filmmaker Jeremy Corbell, who confirmed the authenticity. Mystery Wire, I guess that's the website. That it's not good when you leak through Mystery Wire. Has independently confirmed that the visual materials are included in the briefing presentation prepared by the UAP task force. And so this is, you can watch these videos. You can deep fake anything. Like, so just because it's on video and it's because it's on the web doesn't guarantee the veracity of it. But it's, if the Pentagon is saying, well, that's the video. What was it? United Airlines had to release something before, and they're like, yeah, that's really the video. It said one remarkable video was recorded in July of 2019 by naval officers using night vision device showing what appeared to be a pyramid-shaped object hovering 700 feet above a Navy destroyer. They said the video was taken on deployment on the USS Russell. Shows what they describe as vehicles. They made a great distinction. They made sure in the classified briefing that they gave the distinction, this is not something that we own either. Any kind of black project. This is not something of a foreign military, that these were behaving in ways we did not expect. Listen, I'm not on here like just throwing stuff out from the corners of the web. It is the Pentagon saying, hey, there are these things, and we don't really know what they are. And it's been coming out. I mean, remember President Trump talked about, disclosing that information, and a lot of it came out of the Pentagon then. Now they're doing more. And this doesn't make, this won't make three big things with Dan and Dalton tomorrow. And they're talking about UFOs. Huh. So are the times we live in. All right. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next. Talk to y'all tomorrow. Remember, stream us if you need to. Podcast. When you want to, they're all waiting for you at the website. And gajillion other unidentified platforms out there.